We all love a good thriller, and to see the imagination of an accomplished writer spawn not just one best-selling novel, but an entire series, that's a true reader's privilege. But what happens when that writer's work clashes with the political and social climate of the day? Is it a sudden retirement for everyone's favourite detective? This is FLOG. FLOG stands for Fulfilling Lives Over Greed, or it stands for Fucking Loose Original Gangster. Or it's a word that isn't actually an acronym, and I've just sounded like a foolish loser opining grandiosely. Which also spells flog. To flog is to sell, and to sell is to solve problems. We don't want lowercaseism, we want capitalism. So get ready to flog or be flogged, because confidence is an art. Hello and welcome to FLOG, where we look at organisations and creators doing interesting things in the world. My name is Seetal Singh Gill, and I'm your top FLOG. Often we'll cover emerging and lesser-known entrepreneurs and influential people, not influencers, as everyone knows that's something to do with guns. Today I have a legend of mystery crime fiction. Carl Doherty wrote his first book as a high school student in Galway, Ireland, about an alcoholic detective from his neighbourhood called Roddy O'Hagan. Roddy had a sharp mind, a gruff persona, and a fascinating status as a functional alcoholic. That first book, Roddy's War, launched a career for Doherty that would take him to 12 further novels, detailing Roddy's cases and adventures through the underbelly of Galway. This rogue careered about the city, a champion for solving murders of the downtrodden, while himself spiralling out of control. The adventures of O'Hagan garnered Doherty critical praise and popular devotion, not just because O'Hagan captured a gruff, laconic masculinity that was equal parts suasivious and reprehensible, but because he seemed to sum up an archetypal antihero, not just emblematic of Galway, but of Ireland in its entirety. And Doherty's win of the Booker Prize in 2004 for Murder is a Cruel Meat Maiden was considered not just a highlight for himself, but for crime fiction overall. In the past 2 years, though, Doherty and O'Hagan have been met by a new readership that don't have the same reverence and adoration that made him one of the highest-selling authors in Irish history. How he adapted to his challenge may be the greatest mystery yet. I'm a big fan. Welcome, Cal.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. What a lyrical introduction. You don't hear the word suasivious in an introduction very often.
Well, while other podcast hosts are oblivious, I'm suasivious.
Yes, you are. Gosh, it's almost like a word the writer Will Self would use.
I'm not fond of Will Self.
You don't like his writing? Bit purple for you.
Now, I buy all his books with black typeface on white paper, none of this purple stuff. Now, my problem with him is this self-actualizing name, Will Self. Will Self. I mean, he shouldn't need his own name to sum up his approach to life in an apathetic world. It's like you naming a villain Mr. Feel Murderous or a victim Be Killable. That's just a bit silly.
Oh, I see. I never thought of that. No, you can't be too obvious with names, I agree.
And he uses big words, I think, to compensate for the oversimplicity of the instruction that is his name.
You could be onto something there. Tell me, you said an influencer something to do with guns.
Yes, it's something you shoot with a silencer.
Oh, are you being metaphorical? Influencers posting incessantly on social media need to be silenced. Is that a wry political statement, Seetal?
No, it's a Russian product, I believe, like a crash test dummy that you can shoot. You shoot the influencer. Very popular over there, especially with the military.
Oh my, sounds grim.
No, just checking my phone. Ah, the influencers are made in Ukraine, but sold in Russia with a rifle and silencer kit. There we go. Look, not a gun O'Hagan would use. He prefers a .45 Smith & Wesson pistol, doesn't he? Or did until the 11th book, when his ex-girlfriend Mina left for Latvia with it.
Yes, he does. So glad you remembered. I can tell you're a fan.
I love a good mystery. I love a great business mind. Now, Carl, I know you've spoken a lot over the years about writing, about O'Hagan, about Ireland, but you've been very media-averse of late, so I'm very proud that you're here to share your tale today. I'm going to hand it over to you to talk about the challenge you, a raving Irish success story, have faced.
Very kind of you, Seetal, and look, I haven't necessarily taken to sharing my story readily, and I think you'll hear why. But yes, as some of you may have heard, about 13 years back, I sat down and tapped out a tale of an alcoholic detective from Galway called Roddy O'Hagan, while I myself was a high school student who'd read a few too many Bradbury novels, watched many a film noir from America. That first book, that one tale about a tiny city, hit a spark all over the world, and I've been startled to have O'Hagan become, I guess what you might call, a franchise.
Yes, well, it is a franchise. I always worry about the term franchise as well, especially in the USA. If you're an overeater there and you think of franchises at McDonald's, Kentucky Fried Chicken, and Burger King, and you hear O'Hagan's Mysteries are a franchise, I wonder how many of your books get mistakenly, or worse, deliberately eaten.
I'm unaware of any. Mind you, I haven't asked.
I think that's wise. I don't think it'll be an attractive answer, especially don't want to know what a tubby man from Iowa does with a hardback.
Oh gosh, you're giving me ideas there for a villain. Look, it's a blessing of being a writer to have people tell you what they love about your work. But as I've reached more people, I begin to hear from readers and critics who don't care for my female characters. And I'll give you a few examples of this because I've never forgotten these words. They say, don't read reviews, but harsh words will find a man. They always do.
Like heat-seeking missiles.
Yes, exactly.
Also available in Russia and tested in the Ukraine.
Right.
I used to think heat-seeking missiles was a euphemism for sperm, because that's what O'Hagan called his sperm in the fifth book. As a youngster, I remember looking up victims of heat-seeking missiles, thinking I'd see some very satisfied women, maybe smoking a cigarette with a wry grin and an instinct for an impending pregnancy.
Gosh, I hope that's what you saw.
Nope, no, I saw images of obliterated humans or women with ninth degree burns.
All right.
Yeah, really put me off sex. Just felt like I'd become a murderer just by getting an erection, like Connor in the seventh book.
Oh yes, well, he was very willful in what he did to those poor Dutch girls. Look, on that point, Catherine Carpenter in the New York Times said, and I quote her, Doherty's women are only good for motivating the protagonists when they are dead, or harassing them when they are alive. Doesn't matter whether they are a killer or a lover. The women in O'Hagan's life are routinely psychotic.
Harsh words.
Yeah, I remember reading that and thinking, no, I'm not that reductive, am I? Then the Australian blogger, Pippa Smith, she said, the problem with Doherty is not mediocrity. His writing of women is all the more disgusting, because he clearly has the skill to write great, complex men. One can only conclude that he has a pure, deep misogyny.
Can you have pure and deep misogyny?
Well, I guess so. If you hate women, it can be pure, in that it's not polluted with, say, the love of women, and it can run deep within a man.
Pippa's a wonderful writer, but I think she's wrong, not least with regards to O'Hagan's first wife, Niamh, who I think very resolutely shared her point of view on the world, on the family dynamic, and didn't hold back on communicating very clearly.
Well, I did have a villain cut her tongue out 7 pages after I introduced her in the first book.
Oh, yeah. Hmm. I can see where Pippa's coming from, I guess.
I'll come right out and say it. I don't hate women, and the criticisms rankled me from the start. Some writers even pointed to my 2 marriages as evidence that I have problems with women rather than loving them. I don't see practically how any man can marry a woman out of hatred.
You've obviously never seen an Indian marriage.
Well, I will not speak to that. As you're Indian, I am not, and so I'll take your word for it. I wanted to say I'm a product of my times and place. I grew up not great at talking to women. Awkward would have been a polite word. Maybe not talking to anyone, being that I prefer to sit inside typing or writing, and that comes out in O'Hagan. Most dedicated readers are perhaps like me, awkward around women, drawn to pain, but finding it hard to express themselves. So people who look at their own shites and see the despair in their hearts. That's who I think my readers are. They're not grand romancers, you might say.
If Well, my listeners, shite is the Irish word for shit. An Irish shit in a porcelain toilet bowl, probably largely different to anyone else's because of the yeast content from the beer they drink. And the Irish can channel negative emotions into their stool, which is why they can be such great company on a night out and complete dicks the next week.
But a writer grows from listening, and I've tried to take from that and get better at women. Writing them, thinking like them, traveling and meeting fans got me out of the house and able to listen directly to more females. I especially took on close connections with two wise, outspoken, fiery fans during the tour for Come Set a Knocker, which was the seventh book, and I learned a lot from them. Unfortunately, they also learned about each other in relation to me. They met each other and they did not like each other, and one killed the other in a rage, which I did not see coming.
Yes, I remember that. A terrible tragedy.
It was devastating at the time and even to this day, but I mean, I'll say this. It was still an invaluable learning experience. It was horrible, but I learned a lot, and it really gave me the plot line for Cat Amongst the Pigeons, which was my next novel at the time. I mean, some critics still trotted out the same objections to Murder Angels and Psycho Lovers. You know, they're not convincing. But you know, I at least could point to the dictum of write what you know.
Mm-hmm.
This gave me the idea to expand on their inspiration for the ninth O'Hagan novel. I entirely outsourced my women to women. I recruited a freelance feminist blogger from London named Ursula Haney, to ghostwrite my female characters for a healthy fee. Now I thought, I've listened to women, I've responded to criticism, and I've actively enriched, as in paid her handsomely for honest work. I've enriched a woman in order to enrich my writing. A win for the feminists and a win for me. But the next reviews were even worse. Carpenter, you know, wrote, New York Times, it's as if Doherty has made a token gesture to subdue his misogyny. These are bad caricatures of women. I just preferred it when he wrote bad women.
I mean, it's almost a backhanded compliment because she's saying not only are you a novelist, you're a cartoonist. But then again, in the absence of any actual cartoon, she's insulting you with her forehand quite close to the net. Sorry, I shouldn't be making tennis references. You are Irish, and I will probably add a sequence in post relating to, what's that sport? Hurley.
See, I took this failure badly, but, I mean, Ursula took it worse. Though she wasn't credited with the book, she noted that while it hurts when a man puts down a woman, it hurts worse when it's a fellow sister, that her words. As a show of my belief, though, and to ensure the writing was judged fairly, and to you know, I kept her on for the next novel and gave her co-writing credits. Oh, now, what a hullabaloo that caused. Turns out the despairing shit-starers in the audience took up in arms that my writing was being diluted. The biggest critics couldn't get past their preconceptions. Pepper wrote, Doherty is clearly imitating a female writer, whatever he has paid this supposed blogger to sell her name out like this, is hopefully a sum bigger than the sum of her shame.
Good God.
You know, obviously, this didn't help Ursula's well-being. I told her to block it out, that every damn fool has an opinion. But as I'd taken her on, that faith and belief, you know, my faith and belief should be plenty. I don't think she bought it. You know, luckily the fees had paid her covered a course of therapy, but she'd come out even on the whole deal. She declined to go through the process again. The controversy hadn't hurt my sales, but neither my fans nor critics believed I'd really worked with a woman. I was being called a sellout from the worst of my male fans and a bad fraud and faker from the harshest of my critics. So I decided to step it up a notch. The credit for Ursula had seemed like a misogynist or an anti-feminist attempt to co-opt criticism. Surely the best way of proving myself a listener and an ally would be to welcome in those haters.
It's like that old Godfather line, keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer, and don't hit your wife, because somehow it will get your daughter killed.
This is not about keeping enemies closer. I wanted to show openness and real respect for women, and being an ally, providing a pathway to a better result. Co-writing hadn't worked secrets, so it's time to surrender more. I contacted Carpenter and Pippa and pitched them to co-write The Tenth Awaken by themselves. They could come to me for any consulting on plot or character they wanted, or I'd stay hands off and let everything go through my editor. I could liaise with her if they had, you know, questions. My editor's a woman, by the way, Scarlet, very red hair, no less, though I've been reticent to sell that Scarlet is a woman to my critics. Of course, they thought it was a trick at first. Women are so trying not to trust men, especially these two, don't you know? But I had a contract drawn up, giving them all royalties, bore the intellectual property for all the work I'd previously done on the character. You know, sales for previous books seemed a bit silly. And they went for it.
Seems perfectly reasonable. By the way, Scarlet does have magnificent hair. Is she single?
I believe she is happily engaged to a lovely woman called Karis.
Oh, good on her. I was asking for a friend anyway, a female lesbian friend, because I'm an ally. And doing some groundwork, that is what feminist allies do on occasion.
Now, that certain quarter of my fans kicked up a real fuss, saying I was crazy to relinquish control, that I was giving myself over to crazy man haters. That I was assaulting the manliness of myself and, unforgivably, O'Hagan, and surrendering both our power. What I urged them on social media and at signings, to give it a chance, that they were better off trying it before decrying it, and that my editor wouldn't let a bad story make it into print. Scarlet wouldn't have it. And when the manuscript came in, I had to doff my hat to the ladies. Narrative voice, stylistically, they produced a real belter, a powerful, riveting story. I was delighted with the results and proud of what had resulted from sharing with them this power.
That's magnificent. And you doffed your hat too. Absolutely a sign of respect to women, even today. Some overcompensate and give women the hat, like they give them the hat. And I think that's a slippery slope into sugar babying. Not that I'm saying that's what happened here.
Unfortunately, there's always an unfortunately on things like this, you know. The damn thing didn't sell. My misandrist fans didn't come around. Too many bookshops put it in the wonderful women category. They ghetto and marginalized it instead of in crime. And women readers who might have been intrigued to come on board were put off by the nastiness and the controversy over everything that had happened before. And there were lots of talk of me being a benevolent chauvinist, of striking some bizarre sugar baby arrangements with the two ladies, which nothing could be further from the truth. Or, you know, one woman just said, he's just manipulative. Like that's going to explain it all away. But incompetently so. I was manipulative, but incompetently so. So I was dejected. Although I was happy with the results of the work, it seemed that I had done damage to my career and sadly their careers. You know, Pippa and Miss Carpenter from the Times, by letting these women come in and put their stamp on the series. So in a drunken funk, because I do enjoy a drink, I called both my ex-wives and invited them to take out any lingering resentment on me. You know, we had the whole divorce settlement. They said some things, and I thought, well, let's pile it on, why don't you? I prostrated myself in public and only ended up more pilloried. Now I was in me cups and I was thinking, what more could I do? Would a misogynist let a woman lynch his man parts for reparation? Would he?
The only way I could see that happening is if he had a bomb in his parts so that if a woman or number of women struck it, it would blow everyone to smithereens. So he'd need to be a self-hating, self-destructive misogynist.
Okay. You've given that a lot of thought, I can see that. Look, I suppose I thought I was making a rhetorical stand. But to my surprise, and it was surprise, they both took me up on it. Both my ex-wives decided they were gonna beat up my genitals. One arrived just the other was flagging in energy, so they ended up taking a good 90 minutes together wailing on my ghoulies. My Sarah had worn boots for the occasion, but Daphne had come straight from a Christmas party and was wearing dainty Mary Janes. But of course she knew where I kept my cricket bat. And that was in the garage, you know, I'm a creature of habit.
Cricket bat, not a hurley stick. Sorry, you're quite successful, so you wouldn't be playing hurley, you'd be playing cricket. Ignore that point.
So I lay moaning in bed over the following week, clutching entire catering bags of ice from the service station to my swollen, bruised knackers, at first regretting those drunken calls. I had an epiphany. It came to me how to both reclaim and reinvent Detective O'Hagan. Obviously in the following O'Hagan novel, which I was exclusively releasing to subscribers. By that stage, I'd set up the official O'Hagan fan club.
Which has a cap on membership, so sadly I have not been able to join yet.
Okay, carrying the now notorious scene where the good detective is kidnapped and imprisoned by a woman. Calling back to plots of many of the previous novels, thus satisfying the long-term male readers. She punishes him for his treatment of past female characters, and by doing so, and beating his genitals insensate, largely with a cricket bat, she finally won over my resistant feminist peripheral reluctant readers to the series. And once she is captured, this woman, and O'Hagan is recuperating, undergoes his own epiphany, for now he'll apply his detective skills and low-life connections and style to being a champion of women, an avenger of male guilt, tracking down men like himself and bringing them to justice, the grubby anti-hero turned literal social justice warrior in Galway.
Incredible. I have not read these latest books. Without spoiling them, is it him beating these other buggers with a cricket bat, or does he pair up with a dominatrix?
I'll just say, expect his estranged daughter to make an appearance, and they have one of the more unique discussions about the birds and the bees while bollocking a rapist.
Wow.
His character arc held true, and after my previous band-aid attempts to fix the hashtag problematic elements of the series, that was an actual hashtag, was finally convincing to all, and it sparked a movement. My previous male readers, who'd been shit with women, saw O'Hagan as an ideal archetype once more. With their idol feted and adored by ladies in the books, they decided they could win the sympathy and admiration of ladies in real life by also going through a transformation. And oh boy, were there plenty of women out there willing to get involved. If it involves social change through kicking a man in the nuts, there's no shyness. So that's how I started the Emasculates movement. Women who are fed up with men's lying and poor communication, violence and self-absorption and alcoholism, looking for men who want to change, connecting through violence and forgiveness. Men offer their nuts up as sacrificial lambs, or maybe sacrificial oysters. I don't know where you'd sacrifice them, probably London, but women get to work out their own suffering and change somebody's life.
Oh my God, you started hashtag Emasculates. All those black and blue nuts across the world, it was you and O'Hagan. You. No more black eyes and blue balls, just black and blue balls.
And warm hearts, don't forget, that's the other part of the slogan. No more black eyes and blue balls, just black and blue balls and warm hearts. I gotta tell you, I'm making more money than ever from the website, the app, the motivational speeches, the conferences, and the branded Emasculates cricket bats. Great for on drives. We try not to talk about square cuts, That sounds like a vasectomy. Finally, I've shaken the charge of being a man who hates women. I've shaken that charge. Because now partly it's because my own junk is so mangled that I don't know whether I can reliably call myself a man. But that's okay. Because we live in an era where we all have to change to move forward.
Thanks to you, I can't go on any harmony dates anymore and admit to being a feminist without a metal codpiece and an ice pack. And even then, if she tries to hit my crotch with a baseball bat, I risk metal filing splintering into my groin.
But doesn't it feel good, Seattle, knowing that in a smaller way you're addressing the balance for years, years of sexism, chauvinism and misogyny?
Not really. I mean, if they kissed it better, I could be into that.
Well, Seattle, all I'll say on that front is if I've learned one thing from this experience and closely listening to women, is that change happens very, very slowly. I always realise we as men will forever be fortunate because genital healing, slow as it is still faster than the wheels of social progress.
Wise words. Cal Doherty, thank you for your time. Your two latest O'Hagan books, The Black and Blue Line and Smashing the Pistachios, come out at the end of the month. Join us next week for another groundbreaking, revelatory vlog. Well, you really brought new meaning to the word vlog there.
I was worried. If I told you too much about the scoop, you'd not want to play this.
Look, I'm a big boy, or was up until this girl Zoe went at my nuts with a hockey stick. I had to have some parts surgically removed.
No, dear.
No, look, it's fine. Been seeing one of the nurses. She's one of those girls who's always working, even when she comes home. So based on the fact that she's a nurse, this relationship has another 6 months in it.
Right.
By the way, why is the book called Smashing the Pistachios? Since when are testicles pistachios?
Well, I don't want to spoil it, but let's just say gas gangrene.
Oh, God.
Has a starring role. It's not environmentally eco-friendly or eco-centric story or anything, but it's got a green tinge, I could tell you that.